You know, a lot of execs won't step up and talk about oil much. You know, they're afraid to get dripped on or something. But anyway, we hadn't been at Continental, so we started talking about that a while back. Energy has treated Oklahoma so well. A third of all production coming from Oklahoma. That's tremendous. You know, I think it's Bob Blackburn, Commissioner Anthony, that said that if it hadn't been for oil, it would have been Arkansas. Sure glad we had oil. So I'll try to give you the view, my view, from the eyes of a professional explorationist and a professional geologist of some of the plays that I think is very interesting. So we'll talk about them just a little bit. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't do that here with this conference. So we have such a great promise in America that's going on today. And I talked about that recently as I testified before the House Energy Committee. And that promise is that, energy independence. And it's a great promise, and it's coming about, and it's been brought about by a few pioneers in this industry. And, you know, some of them are here. And over the last few years, started about 20 years ago, and a lot of people talk about different portions of it, but I look at it as single one thing, and that is horizontal drilling. The ability to drill down 2 miles in the earth, turn right, and go 2 miles further, 2 or 3 miles, and hit your lapel pin. And it's that capability that we have out there today, Bill, that has really brought it about. It's that capability that put us into what I term immobile oil. You know, for 160 years, we've been producing the conventional oil, the oil that was trapped in reservoirs that we could easily get to that flowed. It flowed, we could easily get it out. And so we've been working on that 160 years. Well, the immobile portion that's here on Earth is about a third larger than that. So it's huge. And it's something to be reckoned with. And now we're seeing the result of that. We're seeing a 125-year supply of gas, when in 2005 everybody thought we was running out, might have 7 years supply. So it's been a huge turnaround that we've seen with natural gas. And we're also seeing that with oil. You know, a lot of people didn't talk about oil much. You know, it just wasn't a popular thing. You know, and so I started talking, NEDA spokesman, I started talking about it just a couple years ago first, when it was being disparaged so badly. And, you know, we're in a competitive environment. Everybody's after market share. They're out there to get their portion of the market that's available. And so everybody, if they can put one fuel down and, you know, pick one up, well, that's what they do. And so they were disparaging oil, and I felt like it wasn't fair. It certainly wasn't right. The belief was, and had been for, you know, almost 30 years, that we were running out of oil. And, you know, it was a declining production base, was running out of oil, and would soon be out. But we'd seen some things that had turned it around, and, of course, that was a new technology. You know, the multi-stage completions, the horizontal drilling, and the effect of that. And we started seeing a rise in production here in the U.S. Nobody was talking about it. All they were still talking about was, you know, run out. So I started talking about that, and pretty soon, you know, it looked like that we could be. The possibility existed that here in the Americas we could be energy independent. So we hung a shingle out a little over 18 months ago and said, in the Americas, we can be energy independent, including North and South America. Well, pretty soon it became evident that we could be energy independent in North America, including our neighbors. Everybody said, well, we've heard that from every president since Nixon. And we had heard some version of it. The version was that we could be energy independent in the U.S., started with Nixon. And we probably could have been at that time. But people didn't follow through. The political environment wasn't correct, so we wasn't able to do that. But now we are. And this is a little bit different because we're saying North America with their trading partners and a coalition of both Canada and Mexico. So this time it's different in that regard. And certainly we can do that. So what's happened in the last few years that made all that difference? Well, I talked about natural gas, and we've seen a lot of oil production come on, and we'll see a lot more oil production. We're estimating another 3 to 5 million barrels by maybe as soon as 2015. So we've seen imports decline, and certainly from we've got as high as 60%. Some people were saying 70%. We had to teach them how to read the EIA graphs. They wasn't putting any of the liquids with it. If you have it on a consumption side, you certainly have to include it on the supply side. And once you do that, you know, the number's about 60%. And that was in 1997. Since then, we've seen some decline in that. And, of course, right now, when I first started talking about it, it's about 55%. And I thought with some luck we could get below 50%. But it sure surprised me when we did get below 50% as quickly as we did. And now we're at about 42%, so we're certainly going in the right direction. So what's the result of that? You know, we say, you know, world-class, great companies or great industries have to change the world. Well, certainly this is one that is changing the world. We're seeing the effects of it drastically with the amount of imports cut, the amount of American jobs that's being added, you know, the changes to national security, the trade balance reduction. It's estimated by 2020 that we cut 86% off the trade balance. So that's huge. So we've got a lot of good, great things happening. And maybe some of the best that we don't pay a whole lot of attention to, and those are saving American lives. We don't have to so intensely defend some of the areas out there that we have in the past in the Middle East, in the unstable regions. And then there's one other thing that I think people pass over so quickly, and that is the psychological effect of what we're doing. The fact that we've been under the thumb of some other government, some other country, you know, for all this 30, 40 years now. And suddenly we're not anymore. Americans like to be independent. So that's the huge thing that's out there today. The big thing, the primary thing, is energy independence. That's the big thing. I told my guys I'd talk a little bit about our company and what we've built, and talk about the Bakken and another play right here in Oklahoma, of course, the Woodford Cana. So with that, I'll just start through quickly. Had to do that. This just showed what I talked about, you know, the imports and the consumption here in the U.S. and where we're at right now at about 41.7%. So definitely going in the right direction. You can see the trend that's out there. And basically, you know, it's made up of increasing crude oil and natural gas liquids. As the gas industry expanded, so did the liquid content. And certainly we're out there today looking for this liquid-rich portion of all the plays. And that's where the value is. And we'll see that here in just a little bit as well. North Dakota, that's where we operate. And you kind of see what's happened to the production up there over the past few months. It's up to about 675,000 barrels a day. This state is doing quite well, has a budget surplus, almost zero in unemployment. They say there's 3%, but you can't find them. They're just not available. So maybe they're there. We hadn't been able to find them. Governor Dalrymple the other day was bragging about, you know, the state, how well it was doing, and was talking about that. And I told him later, I said, you need to be kind of quiet about that. You know, you've heard of all the redistribution that's going on. Certainly Illinois might need that money. He hadn't thought about that. Said, well, we wouldn't take very kindly and feel very good about it I said, they wouldn't care. Another thing that we talk about gas, a lot of people don't realize that we're the number two crude oil producer in the world, just recently passed Russia and took the number two spot, just slightly behind Saudi Arabia. And, of course, they talk about the imports and where they come from, and we're down about 21% of our imports coming from Saudi Arabia and other OPEC countries like Venezuela, however, it's on there. But it wouldn't take too much to displace those, and that's something we can do over the next few years. And it doesn't surprise anybody that we're the number one natural gas producer in the world. Talk about, where these plays come from. We've seen all of them across the U.S., and certainly the shales have to be treated. And I said it was due to one thing, and it is, and that's horizontal drilling. The other thing we're doing in a lot of plays is fracture treatments, multi-stage fracs. But for the people that's so worried about that, all that is a diversion. They want to direct the attention somewhere else, get it off the issue. Primarily, they're against fossil fuel use. It doesn't matter how clean it is, if it's natural gas. They're still against it. So that's their bottom line. So what are we doing to help? Continental, we chose to be an oil producer an awfully long time ago. Back in the early 80s when natural gas fell, we started looking for oil. We just accidentally found some in Garfield County and thought, gosh, that paid off pretty good. Let's go find the rest of it. So it took us to the Rockies. So we became the number one oil producer in Williston Basin, and it's paid off pretty well, and you kind of see how it's done. We just recently went over 100,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, and tripled the size of the company in about 3.5 years. We was on a 5-year plan to triple, but we got there a little early. And we're not your typical energy company. We are oil focused and basically doing it through the bit. And we're, of course, a leader in some of the fields I just talked about, the Bakken. And the Cedar Hills was one of the first, it was the first field ever drilled with horizontal drilling strictly, without any vertical wells. It wouldn't produce vertically, and it was never fracked, and it doesn't need it today. And Anadarko Woodford, we're a large acreage owner there, about 315,000 acres as of June 30th. And then we're a high production growth company. This year we've given guidance of 57% to 59% for 2012, and basically that's coming from these plays that we're in. And we have an oil-rich inventory that'll be out there decades ahead of us. So at the rate we're going, as fast as we can drill, that we're going forward. It's their 5-year growth plan, and I mentioned where we'd come from and where we're going on our 5-year plan. We're ahead of that plan significantly. And we're tripling, proved reserves right along with production. And all of this coming from the Bakken. And we first found this thing. It was much like some of these other plays that it takes a lot of work to break the code in. And it certainly did us. And we hear about subsidies. We drill a lot of uncommercial wells up here, and nobody ever paid us. I guess we went to the wrong window. When I look in the dictionary, subsidies mean you've been paid. Well, we got the wrong place. But anyway, our team, and I should have introduced them right from the beginning today, they were very diligent, stayed with the process, and we broke the code. And basically this is a tight rock play, tight oil play, in between two shales that was buried about 10 to 12,000 feet. But we've estimated in 2010 that it held 24 billion barrels of oil equivalent, technically recovered oil and gas at that time. Everybody kind of rolled their eyes at that number, Jim, when we first put it out. But it seems like that number has gotten a lot more conservative as time has gone on. When you put that in perspective of proven reserves today in the U.S., that doubles the number of proven reserves that's out there, for instance. So it's a very, very large onshore U.S. find. Been about 5,000 horizontal wells drilled. The industry's adding about 2,500 wells per year. It's estimated that it's going to take over 50,000 wells to develop this. So you can see that we've got a lot of drilling for a good while with this play. We're the largest leaseholder in the Bakken. We've got about 1 million acres in it. We're operating about 20 rigs, and average well production over its life is 603,000 barrels oil equivalent. And we've also tested the lower Three Forks in the Charlotte well and Sunline wells. And we've extended production from the Bakken formation down in the Three Forks that has the possibility of almost doubling those reserves. I talked about the shales, the upper Bakken, lower Bakken. The Middle Bakken formation was what we drilled in initially, and now we've gone down to the first, second, third benches of the Three Forks. And this is widespread across the basin up there, and it's pretty well developed in all these formations other than the fourth. So it adds, I said it adds quite a bit of reserves. If you figure the oil in place at 577,000 barrels, original oil in place just in the Middle Bakken, and with the Three Forks, it adds about another 326 billion. So altogether, they've got about 900 billion barrels. So the question comes up, what can you recover? 24 billion is about 2.5%. So it's a pretty low number of the oil in place. So if you get up to 4 or 5%, you're really talking about a lot of oil that can be recovered from this. We're drilling all this from eco pads. We want to be very good stewards of the land. And eco pad drilling design allows several wells drilled from one single pad. And it's being developed on 1,280-acre spacing. So it's a lot less footprint and somewhat less cost. So we're trying to get as efficient as we can as we go forward. So moving on to the Anadarko Woodford, which the good thing about it, it's a good oily play, and it's right here in Oklahoma, and it's very widespread. Some of our neighbors, Devon, Cimarex, and others are in this play big time. And so anyway, our production is growing. We're about 16,000 barrels oil equivalent per day in second quarter of 2012, and we should have, it's about four times the production we had in 11. We got about 315,000 acres in the lease play, and we say that this could be the next Bakken, and it's gotten very extensive, and we believe it certainly does have a lot of run room and a lot of capability. And particularly, it's an oil-rich play in the southern portion of the play, so it's a nice play, and good thing about it's right here at home. So the Oklahoma oil industry, I'd listened to the governor's comments this morning. They certainly were in order. You know, you look at the energy producing states, and Texas, North Dakota, Oklahoma rank right up at the very top. And certainly energy jobs here in Oklahoma you know, account for about 14% of state total state employment, one out of seven jobs, and about 15-20% of state labor earnings, 27-30% of gross state products, and it's been pretty steady for the last few years. And looking at the Oklahoma gross production tax receipts, one thing that stands out, everybody thinks of Oklahoma as a gas state. But when you look at value and you look at the amount of production taxes paid, you see that last year, 2011, crude oil production tax was $505 million. Natural gas production tax was $459. And it's a little known fact that a lot of people don't take that into consideration quite and think about the impact of oil in Oklahoma. But it's good value, and certainly here we're based on percentage of value, so it's a little bit surprising the amount of oil that comes about, the value that comes to Oklahoma through production taxes. So the oil and gas industry, long-run economic impacts, $52 billion in gross state product, one out of every $3 in gross state product, $28 billion in state personal income, one out of every $5, 344,000 jobs, one out of every six. And then the long-run fiscal impact, almost $1 billion in direct gross production tax, $700 million in state personal income tax, $563 million in state sales tax, and then local sales tax, about $503 million as well. So it adds up and certainly contributes to the state's growth and economic well-being. It's been good to be here and talk. I learned a great deal. A lot I didn't know about CO2 and different things about wind and the amount of wind volume that's gone in and contributed. Certainly, every energy policy I think anywhere ought to be for all of the above. And it shouldn't exclude coal. It shouldn't exclude anything. We need it all and will in the future. And certainly we have to be mindful, of where we're going with clean air. But our air is clean, going back to the 50s. In North Dakota, we have the cleanest air anywhere in the U.S. So it's good. With the oil field, we're taking care of what we do. We're being good stewards of not only the economy, but the environment as we do it and keeping our footprint low. So I love this business. It's been good to me. I started out a long time with nothing. This is the greatest environment, I think, that you could work in Oklahoma. Our commissioners do such a great job. Each one of them are personally involved. I appreciate Commissioner Anthony taking the brunt of fracking and talking about it all over the U.S. and wherever he goes, and being such a statesman for our industry and being a part of it. We're glad to be here in Oklahoma City. We've got our move complete, and it sure feels good in this community. So thank you very much, and I appreciate it.